welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. We have Joe Healy back with us this week as we are going to talk some Big 12 baseball and some Baylor baseball. We have Baylor shortstop Nick Lofton joining us here on the podcast in a little bit. But before we get to Nick, we're deep into Thanksgiving, or we're deep into to November now. Thanksgiving is on its way. How excited are you, to be moving into Thanksgiving season?
Well, it's interesting that you use the phrase moving into Thanksgiving season, because I will spend Thanksgiving week moving. As a little personal tidbit for you listeners out there, they say people like podcasts more when you give them like a little peek behind the curtain into your personal life. I am moving the week of Thanksgiving, but it's kind of created a what I think is kind of cool, which is what, like I'm kind of doing abbreviated early Thanksgivings with family. So it's kind of nice. You know, I've got, you know, one Thanksgiving with my significant other's family, one Thanksgiving early with my family, and then it'll kind of create like a nice low key Thanksgiving at home once I moved, which might be kind of nice because typically I'm having to spend Thanksgiving kind of traveling around to a couple different places. And that's kind of fun to see different folks. But by the end of it, you're just like excessively full, which is a double-edged sword, of course, and a little bit tired, and you're a little bit worn out from it. So it might be kind of nice to be a little low-key this time around.
Yeah, low-key Thanksgiving, definitely the way to go. I don't miss the big family Thanksgivings too much. We are rolling right along here in November. We've got less than 100 days left until opening day, and so we're moving right along here in the off season. And college baseball, never far from our minds, though, no matter what time of year it is. And so we want to get you some breakdowns of what we think the Big 12 is going to look like as we look into 2020. No better time to do that than today. And we're also, like I mentioned, going to talk with Nick Lofton about what the Bears have this year. They're coming off of a couple of really nice years, the last couple, winning the Big 12 tournament in 2018, and then last year kind of just short of the Big 12 regular season title, finishing, I think it was half a game behind Texas Tech. So we will get to all of that in a second. I did want to mention before we get into it that Head of the Class, Baseball America's new college book, is available for pre-order at store.baseballamerica.com. You've heard me talk about it before this fall, but I do think that if you haven't checked it out, you really should, because if you're listening to a college baseball podcast in November, you're really going to enjoy the trip down memory lane that that book provides. And it's just a great way to get you through the winter. It'll be shipping soon for the people that have pre-ordered, if it hasn't shipped already. It's just a great way to get you through the winter until that February 14 opening day. And, we got some dark months coming up here in December and January, if we're going to get real here. And I think this book, Head of the Class, can be a bright light for you to get you through the college baseball winter. So make sure to check that out over at store.baseballamerica.com. And with that now, let's get to Baylor shortstop Nick Lofton. Today on the Baseball America College Podcast, we're very happy to welcome Baylor shortstop Nick Lofton to the show. Nick, I'm sure it's been a busy fall for you. Are you starting to feel like the season's coming up here with as we get deeper into November and get towards Thanksgiving?
Absolutely. Baseball season is just around the corner, and really excited about the season we're going to have this year, about the team we're going to have, and ready to get things rolling.
You're coming off of two really strong years as a freshman and then as a sophomore in 2019, just for yourself and also for Baylor, making the tournament both years and winning the Big 12 tournament your freshman year and coming close to winning the regular season last year. As you guys look to take steps forward in 2020, what was the vibe around the club this fall?
I mean, shoot, we came in this fall just with a winning mentality, and that's kind of how we built our culture here at Baylor, is just being able to do the little things right and do whatever it takes to win. That's kind of what helped us in the past with success as far as freshman year, winning the Big 12, and then just half a game shy last year of winning the conference championship regular season. But it's just the vibe that we get in the locker room with everything that we do on the field. We do with intent. The intensity's high. The effort's there. And we just focus on winning every single day, whether that's on the field in practice or in a game.
Fall is often kind of a time for skill development and kind of taking time to round out your game a little bit. For you personally, what have you been working on this fall that you want to be able to roll out when the season starts in the spring?
Well, I mean, past 2 years, kind of something I've been working on has been my internal clock on defense, particularly understanding the batters that are at the plate, knowing how much time I have, getting myself into good positions to make plays, but it's been knowing who's the guys that run really fast down the line, who can I take my time with, as far as that on defense. And then from an offensive standpoint, it's been kind of not swinging at pitchers' pitches in early counts. I tend to get myself out a lot on pitchers' pitches that aren't necessarily a high percentage hit rate for me, how I could put it. So basically being able to work myself into deep counts, getting myself into a good position to have some success at the plate, being patient, waiting for the right pitch to do damage with.
You talk about some of that stuff, and you were able to, you know, already implement some of that as a freshman, started almost every game since you got to Baylor. What allowed you to be ready to go and take on that kind of load right from the beginning of your college career?
Shoot, I guess it'd be my willingness to win. My preparation, I prepared really well growing up in high school. And then once I got to college the fall, I really prepared myself. I mean, you get into college and you don't really necessarily want to sit on the bench. You want to do everything you can to play, to start. Do whatever it takes to help the team win. So I was able to prepare really well. And when you prepare, you have confidence. And when you get put into a situation where you need to step up, you tend to do that when you're prepared. So it's more of a preparation thing that gave me confidence in certain situations. And when I got the call, I got to step up and do whatever it takes to help my team win. So.
One thing that stood out to me about last year's team was just how veteran that group was. What benefit did you feel like you saw that, both personally and as a team, from having that veteran group together? And then how can you use that as you continue in your career at Baylor?
I mean, having that veteran team kind of made the game a little slower. It wasn't as fast-paced. Rod really didn't have to teach us much. It was more of just let us go do our own thing during the fall and play together and just enjoy the time that we had as a veteran group and with all the older guys. We had a lot of leaders on the team, so it was more of just Rod sitting back and letting us do our thing, which we kind of tend to do last year. And he never really, I wouldn't say he coached us up when we needed to be coached up, but it wasn't, we didn't have to start from scratch, I should say. So it was more of, it was an easier, how can I put it? It was just easier for, I guess, Rod to coach us just because we already knew what Rod expected, what the team expected, what the culture is here at Baylor, and what we wanted to do from coming off of my freshman year with the Big 12 championship win. We wanted to push further and hopefully win a national championship. Unfortunately, we came up a little short, but you know, that's baseball and we're ready to get back after it this year. So
after last season, you were able to play with Team USA over the summer, a great group of guys you had there. What was the most memorable part of that experience that you got to have with Team USA?
Shoot, the best memorable part, I mean, just thinking about it right now just gives me goosebumps, but it was being in another country, and right before the game started, you're wearing USA across your chest, and they're playing your national anthem, and you're singing along to it, and it really puts into perspective of how great America really is. And you start thinking about the things that we have here in America, and you're playing for your country, and you're just trying to do everything you can to win for your country and all that. So, I mean, to me, that was probably the best part, was just standing on that line, hearing the national anthem, and watching our flag get raised.
There were so many good infielders on that team, guys like Alika Williams and yourself and, you know, Foscue and everyone there. Were you able to pick up, you know, certain things from anyone, any of your teammates that have helped your game?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, once you get to play with a team of that caliber, it tends to make you better regardless of what you do. I mean, just being around, I guess, you arguably the best of the best in college baseball, you tend to pick up on things that they've learned, and you pick their brain. I mean, shoot, me not being an everyday shortstop for Team USA, I was able to see baseball from a different perspective, a different view. So I was able to watch Alika and how he goes about doing his business, how he goes about perfecting his craft. Seeing Foscue at second base, Luke Waddell at third, watching how they go about doing their business. I mean, I think Luke Waddell didn't play third base for his school, so seeing how he adjusted to playing a different position. So it was more of just seeing how they go about doing their thing. You start picking up on the little things that they do, and you're like, man, yeah, I can incorporate that in my game. So they pick up on little things, and you pick up on little things that they do. So we just being around each other made us better tremendously. So
one thing I kind of picked up on in covering you guys last year was that it's a pretty loose bunch. And I think that starts with Coach Rod. And I was always impressed by the fact that, you know, he kind of cuts up right along with you guys at post-game press conferences and things like that when I was at the Big 12 tournament. So I'm curious, who's kind of the ringleader there on that team? Who's the guy that keeps the clubhouse loose, that kind of keeps everybody laughing when it gets to be a little bit of a long season and you kind of need to get a pick-me-up?
Yeah, no doubt. It's got to be Andy Thomas, catcher this year and DH last year. But Andy's a veteran guy as well. He's a senior this year, so he's been a part of the great things that Baylor has gone through in the past couple years. So he's been able to basically keep us loose, and that's how I kind of got about from last year, how being so veteran-like, we were so loose, we played with freedom, and Rod really would just sat back and watched us play and let us play our game. So Andy Thomas for sure is a guy that motivates us, keeps us up when things are down. Because, I mean, people say this game is a game of failure. So there's a lot of failure that goes up in this game. So when things aren't going well, Andy's for sure the guy that's stepping in to pick you up, whether it's a bad day at the plate, bad day on the field, or just a bad day in general. So he's a guy that we can really count on, and he's a guy that will definitely help us win this year as well.
So you're from Corpus Christi, and some people listening might not know this, but that is where Whataburger started. That was the original Whataburger was in Corpus Christi. So I'm curious if you have a go-to Whataburger order. You know, if you're rolling up to the drive-thru, what is your default go-to when you pull up?
Shoot, I mean, when I go to Whataburger, I usually went for breakfast, and I love those honey butter chicken biscuits. But for lunch, usually I got a Whataburger from my mom. She brought it to for us for lunch. So I usually got the patty melt, and that's kind of what I don't really go for anything else when I go to Whataburger. But when I do, it's the patty melt for sure.
Well, let's stay on food for a second here. We've got Thanksgiving coming up real fast. What's your favorite part of the meal? What dish do you have to have on Thanksgiving Day?
Sweet potato casserole. My mom makes the best, and that's what I go to all the time. And I tend to eat most of it. So usually a lot of people don't get much of it because I have a bunch of it on my plate. But when we have like a Thanksgiving here in Waco with a bunch of the guys, we had a Thanksgiving with a couple of the teammates last weekend, and that was what I made, was the sweet potato casserole, and of course most of it was on my plate. So but I love that sweet potato casserole. It's unbelievable.
Well, I guess if you made it, like, you might as well eat all of it, right?
Oh, absolutely. I can't let any of it go to waste.
Looking ahead now to 2020, just what are your goals for the season? It's a big one for you personally with the potential of the draft, but also for the Bears as you guys try and take that next step in the NCAA tournament and in the Big 12.
I mean, my goal personally, since I've been playing baseball, is to win. And ever since I got here, I figure that the culture we have here is win, do whatever it takes to win. And that's kind of been our goal every single year, is to win, regardless if it's a regular season game, a scrimmage, if we're racing in weights, doing like sprints, do whatever it takes to win, compete against each other and compete against that other team, whether we're up by 10, down by 10, we're going to compete. So basically that's been the goal this year. And that's what the goal has been. This whole time I've been at Baylor, just do whatever it takes to win and everything else will pay off. So,
well, we got one more question for you, Nick, and we'll get you out of here. But what is your favorite part of being a student athlete at Baylor? I'm sure it's a fun place to play and go to school, but what's your favorite part of that experience?
Favorite part about being a student athlete at Baylor is probably be how close every single team is here. From baseball to basketball, football, golf, tennis, you name it. We're so close. I have so many friends on the football team, basketball team, women's basketball. We don't shy away from each other. It's cool to see. I don't know if you ever saw on Coach Rod's Twitter, but we were watching the Baylor football game, and we were just – and this was before, like 10 minutes before practice, so – of course, we still had to get ready for practice, but we were cheering on our football team, who's was 9-1 now. So, I mean, they're off to an unbelievable start. And I mean, shoot, we pull for each other. They pull for us as a baseball team. So they come to our games, we go to their games. So it's just the camaraderie that we have here. We're tight. We're close to each other, and that's kind of what drew me here to Baylor as well, is just how close everyone is as far as an athletic standpoint. So,
well, that is awesome to see and to hear, and that makes for a great environment for everyone. Nick, we really appreciate you taking the time here to join us on the Baseball America College podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you again to Baylor shortstop Nick Lofton for joining us here on the podcast. Really interesting stuff to hear from him. He's been just such a big part of what Baylor's done over the last 2 years, Joe. And when you look at that time, you know, it's been a pretty successful period for Baylor baseball under Steve Rodriguez. You had Shea Langeliers, of course, the All-American catcher last year, and now Nick Lofton may join Langeliers as a first-round pick. So big time for Baylor baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lofton's going to be among those players with the Shea Langeliers that I think are going to be pretty closely tied to this kind of resurgence for Baylor baseball under Steve Rodriguez. I think Langeliers might be the marquee name there because he was really part of that first group that came in for Coach Rod. But Lofton is almost as important to get for Coach Rodriguez to not only bring him on, but to develop in the way he has to become another first round pick. And so one thing it was interesting to hear Lofton talk about was, and first of all, kind of the nuanced things he's working about, his internal clock, things like that. And one thing he mentioned that I think is kind of got me thinking was about the importance of, he mentioned, seeing the game from a different perspective. And I think sometimes I forget that, you know, for a lot of these kids, especially the ones, as you mentioned, with Lofton, who have played from almost literally minute one of their college careers, is how rare it is that they get to see live game action at that level from that vantage point. I mean, he's typically standing out at shortstop, kind of thinking through the game from shortstop, and obviously there's value in that, and he is kind of the captain of the infield defense, if you will, and that's an important role, but it's probably rare the number of times since he was a little kid, frankly, where he's gotten to kind of observe the game from that different angle and think about it that way, and I think that's, you know, a way in which it might be a little bit overlooked in how you can develop your game, is kind of seeing it from a different perspective. So that was really interesting to me when he said that.
Absolutely. You hear guys who are injured talk about that, but you know, he didn't have an injury. He just got on Team USA, and Olico Williams is absolutely spectacular shortstop. Nick Lofton is really, really, really good himself, but somebody's got to sit in that infield. And so when that was Nick Lofton's turn not to play, he got to see the collegiate national team and at that level, at that field view from the dugout. And those are some really high-end players that you're watching do their thing. And so I can definitely see how that, leads to a different kind of view of the game and different perspective and how important and impactful that can be. So that's, that is a nice bit that, you're right, Joe. I don't think about that often enough either. And, so when you hear someone say that like that, it is you can see how that would be valuable and where that comes from. We also asked Nick about Whataburger, and while this is not breaking news in general, it's breaking news to me. I don't know if it's breaking news to you, Joe, but I'm just seeing now that In-N-Out is opening its first location in Houston this week. I don't know how you feel about that, but your reaction to that news.
Yeah, it's a little, not surprised, I guess. In-N-Out has kind of been encroaching on Texas for a while now. They've got one in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I actually went there when I was at the Frisco tournament early in the 2019 season, and it's pretty solid. Like I've always said, my hot take about regional fast food is that it's all pretty good. I'm not really necessarily someone who's going to tear down other regional fast food, but it does feel like a little bit of a little bit of knife in the back, they're encroaching on Whataburger territory, but I know that's just an emotional take on my part. So I'm kind of all for it. In general, I understand Houston is a city with a lot of transplants. So I'm sure there are plenty of folks from the West Coast living in Houston who want, who want to be able to get that taste of home. I feel the same way living where I live here. In the Midwest right now, that I would love for there to be a Whataburger that I could go to, even if I had to drive hour and a half, what have you, to get to it. It would just be nice to have that little piece of home. So I guess from that standpoint, I can see it and understand the draw to it. But I tell you what, between In-N-Out moving into Texas and more specifically now Houston, and the recent news that it's probably been close to a year now or maybe more. I don't know, but that Whataburger was purchased by a company out of Chicago. And is no longer owned by the original owners in Texas.
Was that Mr. Whataburger? Was that the original owner?
That's right, Mr. Whata. Yeah, his first name was actually Whata. It was like, okay. Whataburger was his name. So it's Mr. Burger to you. Started in Corpus Christi. Corporate HQ is actually in San Antonio. I make that mistake all the time, thinking the HQ is still in Corpus Christi. But originally in Corpus Christi, moved to San Antonio. Our HQ is in San Antonio. So between In-N-Out moving in and Whataburger under some ownership up in the Midwest, it's kind of turning the burger world upside down in Texas. And people ask me, I'm not far from Chicago where I am now, and people ask me how I feel about that. And I'm of two minds. One, if it brings Whataburger to a larger group of people, a larger population, I'm fine with that. I think I would enjoy people getting to know what I've been talking about. But my fear is that as they continue to grow, it just kind of maybe erodes the product a little bit. Maybe those fears are unfounded, but I just can't help but feel like if this becomes a nationwide thing, it's going to be hard to kind of keep that consistency. And what I don't want to see them do is water down the menu to make it a little less unique. Because one thing that I really like about Whataburger, and I've said this before, is that it is a pretty varied and unique menu. And I don't want them to lose that and just start slinging pretty generic burgers and chicken strips. So that remains to be seen. Maybe those fears are unfounded, but it's something that's crossed my mind.
Well, we will continue to keep a close eye on the state of fast food in Texas.
Yes, thank you for understanding the gravity of the situation.
Yeah, as the situation develops, we'll be watching this. But when we look at Baylor in the 2020 season, Nick Lofton is back to anchor that defense. Like we talked about, there's a lot leaving the Bears from this last run. When you look at guys like Langoliers and Wenzel and Richard Cunningham, and on the mound, closer Kyle Hill, who was an All-American, did not allow a run last year, earned or otherwise, in 29 innings. He's gone. There is a certain amount of talent that left Waco. But Joe, what do you look at when you look at Baylor looking at 2020?
I still think it's a team that has a chance to compete at the top of the Big 12. I don't know that they'll challenge Texas Tech, and that's a discussion you and I have a little later. But I still think it's a team that's gonna compete at the top of the league. One thing that I think Coach Rod has done a nice job of is class balance. I mean, it was as I mentioned in the interview with Nick, is that it was a very veteran team last year, and it's still kind of a veteran team coming back. I mean, they're going to be young in spots, and they have big names to replace the ones that you mentioned most specifically. But it's still a team that returns Nick Lofton or, you know, Davion Downey. Andy Thomas is a guy he mentioned who's kind of an underrated player, I think, just
in
general. He hit
335 last year, which I had not remembered until I pulled up Baylor's stat sheet.
Yeah, I think he missed a little time early, and maybe that, you know, got off to a little bit of a slow start. And so maybe, you know, got overlooked early on in Baylor's season when they were, I mean, you may remember last year they dealt with just a ton of injuries seemingly right out of the gate. And it was kind of impressive that they were able to kind of hold it together for as long as they did to get healthy. But, you know, so they've got pieces. I mean, Tyler Thomas back on the pitching staff, Jimmy Winston, guys like that. I mean, it's Paul Dickens stepped into a big role last year. So it's not a barren cupboard, which I think sometimes when you have these classes of players who have been transformational for the program that filter out of the program, whether due to graduation or getting drafted, I think you kind of expect a little bit of a reset, but Coach Rod really has done a good job of keeping the team fairly balanced. And if you're asking me now, I think this is a good team that's going to be in a regional again next year. I don't know that they'll be as good as they were last year. That seems like a hard trick to pull off given what they lost there. But I think it's still a regional caliber club, just maybe not one that's ready to compete for the league title, but I'll be ready to be surprised if they do.
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially when you look at some of the power that's gone, you know, especially Wenzel and Langoliers. They were the two of the most powerful bats in that lineup, and so they're now gone. But, you know, Andy Thomas hit 22 doubles last year. He turned some of those into home runs, or maybe the team learns how to score a little bit differently, and things look a little bit different. I do think they're going to pitch. They're definitely going to miss Kyle Hill at the back end, because when you have that kind of lockdown piece, that really makes everything else work around it pretty well. But I think that, you know, having those starters back, you mentioned Winston and Dickens, they're coming back, and they vacuumed up a lot of innings last year. And if they can take a little bit of a step forward again this year, then I think that Baylor's looking pretty good on the mound. And
yeah, I think that's right. I think it's not going to be the most high-end pitching staff. And I think some of the offensive pieces aren't necessarily going to be the most high-end offensive pieces. You know, whether there's another Davis Wenzel here or, you know, Shea Langoliers when he was fully healthy and you know, going on all cylinders. But I feel like they have just a really high floor. Like, I feel like I know what I'm going to get at a bare minimum from this Baylor team. And I think they showed that a little bit, like I alluded to a minute ago. I mean, they really kind of weren't working on all cylinders last year, and they were able to fight through it and still secure some quality wins while they were still working on getting healthy. And I think that bodes well for their ability to bounce back in 2020, even without some key cogs from last year.
Well, what we also wanted to do today was broaden this up and talk a little bit of Big 12. We haven't really had a chance to do that here on the podcast yet this fall. We heard from David Pierce last week in the signing day special, but beyond that, we haven't really drilled down into the Big 12 yet. So, Joe, as we look at 2020 in the Big 12, you have Texas Tech coming off of their best ever season, arguably, when you consider that they finished in the bracket final in Omaha, something they had never done before, won the Big 12 regular season. I mean, I'm sure you can find bigger regular season win totals or something for Tech, but that was a landmark season. Big 12 looks like it's theirs for the taking again in some respects. You know, we had West Virginia have a sensational season of its own, but now Alek Manoah is gone, and, you know, it looks like West Virginia might slip a little bit this year. We talk about Baylor may take a small step back. Texas finished in last place. Where are they going from here? What's happening with the Oklahoma schools? Oklahoma State, of course, reached Super Regionals last year, lost to Texas Tech in three games. Oklahoma missed the tournament, but has a lot of pieces back. When we look at this conference as a whole, and I can't forget about TCU, you know, making the tournament just barely, but does seem to be building a little bit there. Looking at this, I see Texas Tech as the favorite. What about you, Joe?
Yeah, I think so. And you and I had a conversation offline a couple weeks about this a little bit. And at the time, I think I was kind of underselling Texas Tech because I'm looking at the roster and looking at what they lost with Josh Young and Gabe Holt. And I started to wonder about where's the star power on this team. And maybe that's a valid, kind of like we talked about Baylor, maybe that's a valid criticism, a strong word, but maybe that's a hole that in their roster is just that big time star power. First of all, knowing Texas Tech and Tim Tadlock's history, that probably won't end up being the case. They will find guys to be breakout stars. They always do. But I think what I was underrating a little bit was the depth here. And I mentioned it last year in Omaha a couple times, just various tweets here and there during their run, that it was incredible that they had some of these guys who just didn't see the field much because they had the level of depth they did. A guy like Drew Baker was kind of a bit role guy. Easton Morrell had some big hits and was kind of a bit player. They were kind of platooning catchers, and both guys could have probably played a lot on a lot of other teams. So that is again the case this year, though. When you look at the guys I've mentioned, plus, Dylan Noisy is back. Quietly had a really good season. And then Cody Masters is back, a guy that Tim Tadlock talks really highly about. Kurt Wilson is a veteran who's got a lot of really good raw tools. And then, Tech is doing that Tech thing again, where they've got a lot of really high-end, big-time arms, in addition to Micah Dallas, who stepped in last season and really kind of acquitted himself better than I think most assumed he would. He's back along with John McMillan, Mace Montgomery, Bryce Bonin's a high-end guy, and a bunch of guys who saw a lot of innings last year. So I think what you're saying is correct about the Big 12, and I think there's a lot of obvious candidates maybe to take a little bit of a step back. Oklahoma State, perhaps. We just talked about Baylor maybe being just a tick below where they were last year. But then at the bottom, you've got maybe Texas a little bit better. I actually like Oklahoma quite a bit this year. So it feels like maybe the Big 12 is a little compacted in the middle this coming year. And in a year like that, Texas Tech maybe feels the most equipped to be the team that stands out above the rest there.
Yeah, I think that, it's natural to look at it and say Young and Holt are gone and where's the star power. But I do feel like we've seen this from Louisville in recent years where stars leave and guys who either didn't play as freshmen or barely played a bit roles are ready to take on bigger roles. And I feel like Tech is kind of moving into that kind of a situation where guys emerge as sophomores or juniors and are ready to go in a big way. A lot of the oxygen got taken up last year by Young and Holt and, some of these other very impressive players that they've had there. But a guy like Noisy can take on a bigger role, or a guy like Drew Baker or Max Marishak can, move into something that develop as a player into something more. And they have some nice pieces coming in. Nate Rombach behind the plate is potentially the kind of catcher that Texas Tech hasn't had. They've had a lot of stars. They haven't really had a star catcher. So if he can be that kind of player behind the plate for them, that's really significant. And even if he's not quite ready defensively as a freshman, he has a big time bat that's going to play right away, you would have to figure. And so that's a nice piece to come in for them. And Austin Becker transferring from Vanderbilt, I mean, he could be their Friday starter. Potentially, he has that kind of arm. So I think this is a bit of a reload situation here for the Red Raiders. There are going to be some questions, but I think that at this point, the talent level in Lubbock is pretty significant. And when you look at just the experience that they'll have and what Tim Tadlock has been able to do in terms of consistently winning, I do feel like Texas Tech is the team to beat in the conference until proven otherwise right now.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, that's the what they've earned with the way they've played over really since Tim Tadlock has arrived in Lubbock. And in this year in particular, I think it's a year that looks like, a year we're going to have to give someone the benefit of the doubt a little bit in the Big 12. And, Texas Tech is certainly a chief among that list.
All right, so if we're saying Texas Tech is the preseason favorite, who then are we looking at to challenge the Red Raiders? I know you mentioned you really like Oklahoma. The Sooners bring back pretty much the entire pitching staff. So they've got a lot coming back. They missed the tournament last year, but they're going to be much older this year. Last year maybe was a bit of a transitionary year. Is Oklahoma the challenger? Can we see TCU jumping up maybe, or Oklahoma State still doing it, or is Baylor the last year's second place team?
I think it's the Sooners for me. I think that's where I stand. And, you know, knowing that, you know, there's always something that happens in the springtime that maybe changes your opinion a little bit. But I think where I'm at now is behind the Sooners as the team I'm looking at as maybe the second best in the Big 12. I really like, you know, a rotation of Cade Cavalli and Levi Prater. That's a pretty good start. And if you want to start to talk about high-end rotations in the Big 12, I think that's maybe where you got to start. Those guys are both really, really talented, had really nice years last year. And then you got even a guy like Ben Abram, who was kind of relegated because they also had a Nathan Wiles, a veteran starter. You know, Ben Abram was kind of relegated, if you will, to midweek duty. You know, he's a guy who could step up and do a bigger role. But in the grand scheme, you look at, you know, they're bringing back two-thirds of the rotation minus Wiles, obviously, but have somebody in a Ben Abram, barring someone else stepping up, who can step right up into that rotation spot. You know, the only player on offense they really lose of import from last year is Briley Ware, who was one of those guys who feels like he'd been in Norman forever. But, you know, he is gone, and they lose a couple pieces in the bullpen. But by and large, this team is all returning from last year, and it was a group that sputtered down the stretch. I mean, by the time I saw them in the Big 12 tournament, they were really, really scuffling, and they needed to have like a, you know, a gangbusters week in Oklahoma City to really put themselves in position to get into a regional. And they not only didn't do that, they really, you know, just really struggled in Oklahoma City and never really put up much of a fight and got blown out in their eliminating game. So it wasn't a great end to the season, but let's not forget, this was a team that got off to a really good start last year and felt like maybe they were arriving a little bit early. But it turns out they weren't quite ready for prime time. And I think in 2020, I think that this is a group that will be ready for prime time. And you would know better than I with the work you do in recruiting. Skip Johnson is doing a really good job recruiting and bringing in talent to kind of supplement what was already there. So I think it's only going to get better for the Sooners. You mentioned a couple of other teams that I think are also going to be in this mix. I don't think Oklahoma State's going to just go away, even though they too are a team that lost quite a bit of talent. They've got a lot of holdovers from that team last year. I think that serves them well. TCU is another one. I mean, it was a team that, as you mentioned, just eked into regionals last year. But it was talked about a lot, and it was given as a reason, you know, why they got into regionals. Oh, they've been injured for a lot of the year and they're starting to get healthy. You know, we don't need to relitigate that, but it does suggest that, you know, they did play fairly well down the stretch in the face of a lot of injuries. And so, I mean, just improved health in 2020 could really improve the Horned Frogs' chances of competing at the top of the Big 12. So I think, and to your point, they're kind of building something now. I think it's a safe bet to say that the TCU is going to be in the mix as well.
Yeah, I think that that's fair on TCU. I think that when you look at what they've been able to bring in from a recruiting side, the last couple of years, it's definitely gone. I mean, like, I know if you go look at the rankings, I rank TCU pretty highly the last few years too. But I feel like it's better right now. I feel like when you look at what the 18 class and the 19 class are, I think that history is going to judge those a lot better than the 16 and the 17 class. You know, so I think that definitely helps them. There's uncertainty in that rotation right now. And, you know, so they're definitely going to be question marks, but I think that the talent is there for Kirk Sarlous to work with. It's a matter of them getting it out of them and how quickly those guys can take on the roles that they're going to have to with the talent that left Fort Worth. But, you know, I like Oklahoma. I think it's a big jump in a certain extent, but Cade Cavalli and Levi Prater, like you said, might be the best 1-2 punch in the conference. And that definitely means an awful lot. I do think, though, that Oklahoma State might still be ahead of them. I think that, you know, Parker Scott, what he did on the Cape this year, it was kind of a brief summer for him there, but he was really good while he was there. If Bryce Osmond, the highest ranked recruit in the Big 12 in the last, I don't remember how many years, several, he comes in, and if he can play right away in a big way for the Cowboys, that really kind of changes things. And then you look offensively, and Oklahoma State under Josh Holliday has been very solid offensively with some guys that aren't necessarily the biggest names. And I think that I would look for that to continue this year. Houston Morrill's back in the infield. They've got Kaden Polkovich, who, speaking of guys that stood out on the Cape, that guy. He's coming in from the junior college ranks and can be a definite immediate impact bat. They do have to replace some power when you look at the guys that are leaving. But I really like what the Cowboys have, and you know, I really want to trust what Josh Holliday can do with them. So I think that if I'm having to pick a direct challenger for the Red Raiders right now, it might be the Cowboys. I think the Sooners and the Horned Frogs and the Bears are all, they're definitely going to be in the mix. They're all very worthy challengers. But I think it might come down to, as we saw in that Super Regional in Lubbock, I think it might come down to the Red Raiders and Cowboys again.
Yeah, it's a good point you make about Oklahoma State. I mean, that, you know, if you feel a little bit better, you know, about Oklahoma State's pitching, that probably bodes well for what they can do in 2020, just because, to your point, you know, they're going to find a way to be offensive. They always do. Kind of seems like they always will be. So if you feel more positive about the pitching side of it, which in the past has been more of a question there, but if you feel more positively about that, then I think you have to be bullish on Oklahoma State just in general.
I think, though, the biggest or the most the question I get asked about the Big 12 most often over the last 6 to 8 months is what's wrong with Texas or what happened to Texas? And I still don't have a great answer for that. When I saw Texas, they were beating Texas Tech in a series to open Big 12 play. I thought the Longhorns were, you know, definite Big 12 contenders again and Omaha contenders. And I thought things were going great for them. I thought that team was great. And then they didn't win another Big 12 series the rest of the year and finished in last place. It was a very confounding situation there when you saw Texas early in the season versus what they were late. Well, now Texas brought in a top 10 recruiting class. They're going to play because they're really talented and there are spots available for them. They're a little healthier. DJ Petrinski is healthy behind the plate. I know they're very excited about that. And some of the young kids they were playing last year have another year's worth of experience around them. Is Texas back? Is this wonderful question that college football gets to ask every year and has been able to ask for like the last decade now. So Joe, I'm going to ask you, is Texas back?
Well, it kind of depends on your definition, which I know is the hot take answer everyone wants to hear.
Well, that's also the answer in football that everyone gets to give too, is because like last year, like, oh, is Texas back because they want a Sugar Bowl, or like, are they supposed to go win a national title? But anyway, I digress.
You know, well, and real quick on that, we are not a college football podcast, but don't read into bowl games. Just don't do it. Just don't fall into that trap. We do that every year where a team wins a bowl game and it looks impressive, or the vice versa. Boy, this team looks awful. And we read, because we have a long offseason, we start to read too much into that. Don't read into bowl games. But I know I'm digressing. But it's kind of interesting, too, how Texas, with all of its major sports, with baseball and football and basketball, has kind of they've all kind of been through this period of time where they've had to kind of ask this question. And I'm not suggesting that there's like any sort of bigger thing going on. I just think it's probably coincidence that kind of happened that way. But here we are with baseball. And I think,
come on, it's Texas. Can we not like speculate about the governor situation and who likes A&M more or something? Like, is this not a thing that we can do?
I will direct you, if you would like that discussion, I will direct you to some message boards. I can send you links. those discussions are out there if you look for them. You know, but it's extraordinarily, first of all, extraordinarily unlikely that they finished last again, obviously. And really, it is kind of unlikely they finished last, even as much as they struggled down the stretch last year. It seemed inconceivable they would miss the Big 12 tournament. And it was kind of a perfect storm of things where, you know, Kansas State kind of started to find its sea legs toward the end of the year, which, on a side note on Kansas State, I actually kind of sneaky like their team for next year. I don't know what that means and like what that ceiling is, but just put a pin in that for, you know, down the road. So they kind of found their legs late. Kansas was pretty frisky. It was a good year for Kansas, you know, so I think that was kind of a perfect storm of things where Texas fell apart at a time where some other teams were starting to play better and it just create a situation where they finished in last. But I think this is a regional team, again, just because, you know, Texas more often than not is going to be a regional team and can kind of stumble their way to one because the talent is so good. And as you have probably seen in the recruiting rankings, Teddy has worked diligently on, like, Texas is still recruiting well and the talent is still there. And there are a lot of guys in this team that last year just kind of faltered down the stretch, that whether it was because they were young and there were workload concerns as time went on, or maybe they just weren't quite ready for the roles they were given. You know, I don't really know, but if you assume that some of that kind of gets mitigated by maturing or just kind of being a little more prepared or being healthier, I don't think there's any reason to think this isn't a regional team. Certainly, I don't think this is a team that's going to, you know, be near the bottom of the Big 12 standings again. But that just kind of speaks to just how strange 2019 was, because even when you look at it, even when you look back and you look at the stats and you look at the players and you look at the way the season played out, this wasn't a season where they kind of got their record got fattened up by a bunch of teams that, oh, at the time we thought they were good, but it turns out they weren't. You know, LSU and Tech turned out to be really good teams. You know, I mean, that stayed consistent throughout the season.
And like, yeah, they lost to Stanford. Stanford, you know, is a super regional team.
Exactly. So it's not like this was one where, like, oh, in hindsight, we didn't know then what we know now, and now it makes sense. It still doesn't really make a ton of sense, but that's baseball for you. That's a small sample size. 56 games, I always say this, 56 games is a small sample size in the grand scheme of things. Just ask anybody who, you know, writes sabermetrics. I mean, that's just the way it works. So, yeah, I think this is a regional team just because I think Texas is, we should always assume, going to be a regional team, and seasons like 2019 are going to be the exception and not the rule.
Yeah, I think all of that's fair. I think that several of their pitchers made nice jumps over the summer, several of their young arms. If you look at what happened on the Cape and elsewhere, I think that the pitching staff has a chance to be a lot better, and that would be pretty significant because Texas remains, Augie Ball is gone, but it's still a pitching and defense place. You know, they can bring the fences in, and they've done that, but it's still going to be about pitching and defense there in large part. And I like the pitching to be better than it was a year ago. And I think they have offensive pieces that they can make work. You know, is Cody Clemens walking back in and hitting 20 home runs again? Probably not. Obviously, Cody's not doing it. But is that type of player on the roster? Probably not. They're going to have to do a little more to manufacture some runs. And you know, I think they have some nice pieces there. And you would think that Troy Tulowitzki joining the staff could help the offense as well. You heard last week on the podcast, David Pierce saying how well that has gone this fall, how important of a staff member Tulo has become. And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of offensive impact Texas can have this year. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to the pitching staff being ready to go and being one of the top three, I guess, in the conference.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just quickly, if you're looking for kind of confirmation that the pitching is where some of the upward potential lies, as you look at last year, and they were clearly, when you look at the stat sheet, I mean, we already knew this is not groundbreaking data research here, but you look at the stat sheet and they have, I'm not going to count it here, but they might have up to a dozen guys who appeared in double digit games. And for a team that has its pitching figured out, you wouldn't see that. So clearly it was a team that was really trying to, like, mix and match and just see what worked. And all I'm saying is, if you just assume a certain subset of those guys who had their struggles last year, most of these guys have ERAs 4 or higher. If you assume that some subset of those guys improve, you mix in a few new faces who are ready to contribute right away, you know, I think that goes a long way towards fixing some of these issues. But last year was clearly a year where they were experimenting. This year, they should just have to experiment a little less.
Yeah, you would think so. And Trey Faltine, a freshman, should be able to come in and take over at shortstop. That seems to be the way things are trending in Austin. And, I mean, we can't forget that David Hamilton was lost in January last year for the season. And, you know, that caused pieces of the infield to be shuffled around. So, again, I just think pitching and defense-wise, this team should be better. And that should mean that the Horns finish much better than they finished last season. One more Big 12 question for you, Joe. Who do you got? Matt Holliday, Troy Tulowitzki, one at-bat in the big leagues. Who are you taking?
That's a good question. I guess I'm probably taking Matt Holliday. Like I just, some of this is, and it's kind of interesting that both those guys were so linked to the Colorado Rockies. I hadn't really thought about that until now, but
Colorado Rockies reunion in I don't think the Big 12 volunteer assistant coaches get together for a meeting, but if they do, Colorado Rockies reunion.
Okay, they just might as well have that thing in Denver. I think I'd go Matt Holliday. I mean, that's really close. Obviously, both great players, so this is no slight to either, but I think I'd go Matt Holliday, and I think that's colored a little bit by the fact that it's so – I'm guilty of this too. It's difficult to really remember how great Tulo was at his peak because it was – he just didn't have that long at that
peak. It's a very brief peak, yes.
Correct. And so, like, I'm just betting on – you know, Matt Holliday is maybe the more solid option, the more consistent option. You know, if you pluck him for an at-bat at any given time, he was going to be there and be a solid option and put together a good at-bat. Now, I know that's probably not the spirit of the question, but my memory of those two players lends me to go that direction for that reason.
Yeah, I think that's probably a similar thought process to what I would have had. And I wish, though, that I'd asked the question as for an at-bat against Kirk Sarlous. To get another Big 12 coaching element into this. But it's an interesting conference in terms of big league coaches because they also have Steve Rodriguez, who is a big leaguer. You know, so there's a lot of ex-big league talent concentrated in this league. We'll see how it all shakes out this spring. It should be a very competitive league again. I don't know that it's going to be quite as... You know, it was pretty deep last year. I don't know that there's the depth this year, but I do think that they have some potential really high-end teams, obviously talking about Texas Tech, but also whoever finishes second in this league, whether it's any of those teams we were talking about, you know, they're going to ultimately be in the mix for an Omaha spot as well. I would think maybe this year they cannot match them up in a super regional, and we have a full... array of college content over at baseballamerica.com for you to check out. So I would encourage you to do so. I know it is November, but there's plenty still going on around the country, and you can find Head of the Class, Baseball America's new college book. Check that out for pre-order at store.baseballamerica.com. Joe and I will be back with you next week. It is Thanksgiving week. We are going... It's a short week, but we're going to give you a new podcast because, you know, if you're on your way to grandmother's house, on your way to wherever, we'll have a podcast for you. Even if you're just avoiding your relatives in the other room, you need to slip in the earbuds. You can listen to some college baseball talk, and maybe that'll help take your mind off of all of the ongoings as your Thanksgiving spirals out of control, as some of them apparently do, according
to service journalism.
Yes, we're here for you for that. So check that out. And the best way to make sure that you get that podcast is to be subscribed to the Baseball America podcast in your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts, you can find us. So make sure you're subscribed. And if you can, leave a rating or a review. We very much appreciate those as well. Thank you to Baylor shortstop Nick Lofton for joining us today. I've been Teddy Cahill. He's been Joe Healy, and we thank you for listening.